Insiders. This is Bruce Ash coming to you live from my underground bunker in Coronado, California, where the men are strong, the women are good looking, and the parents think their kids are way above average. We weathered that fake storm last week, and now we have another great show for you today, Eb.
Hey, Bruce and I want to remind you to please support our great sponsors, Eric Rudin and his great team at Essential Pest, 886-3029. Joy from Corazon Cabinets, for cabinets you'll love, 488-2266. And of course, Jamie Kipper at Tucson Iron Retail. Call her or Craig at 209-1576.
Also supporting Inside Track is my great co-host, but he just blew the opening.
I just saw that.
Mr. Wilkinson for Wilkinson Wealth Management. Call for Eb at 777-1911. Make sure he's not cleaning his guns at the time.
Yeah. Hey, good news. On today's special edition of Inside Track, in Hour 1, friend of the show, Army Special Forces warfighter, former Arizona Senator Whip, congressional candidate and innovative thinker at the Greetings Card Company down on the road from us, U.S. Frank Sinori, U.S. Senator, Frank Antonori joins us to speak his mind on pretty much everything. In Hour 2, Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition talks about, well, you know, crime in Tucson from 2 until about 2:30. And State Senator Vince Leach rounds out our action-packed show today to talk about state government business. Producer Tom is running the boards and taking your calls for our guest today at 790-2040. Bruce?
So I just want to make sure we get in our last live plug before we take into Frank. Lastly, but certainly not leastly, we're pleased that Perfection Auto Works is our newest Inside Track sponsor. Call Mike Emery at 323-8650. He and his great technical team will help make your auto great again. Okay. Eb, you want to go ahead and greet Frank after? But I need to ask him a real quick question. Frank's taken some time away from deer hunting today, this afternoon, to speak his mind on pressing issues of the day. But before we get to the real hearty news here, Frank, how's hunting going today?
Lots of deer. It's been a blast. It's very exciting, of course. A lot of does with fawns that actually still have spots on them, which is nice to see. It means the coyotes didn't get them. And then the bucks have been kind of small. And, you know, during the archery season, I kind of hunt for antlers. And I have a rifle tag that I use at the end of the year to fill the freezer if I don't get one during the archery season. So I'm just enjoying myself in the beautiful Arizona outdoors, watching the wildlife. And then maybe I'll get lucky in a nice buck will walk by and I'll be able to put him in the freezer before the end of the archery season. But so far, so good. It's a beautiful day.
All right.
The weather's awesome.
Yep.
Couldn't ask for a better day to hunt.
Hey, importantly, what unit?
Well, I'm hunting in where I live out here in Cochise County in 31B.
Perfect.
It's out here. It's gorgeous.
Remember, no hunting within a quarter mile of an occupied structure. So once you leave your house, it's no longer occupied.
I got a boat. I'm hunting with a bow, so I'm not...
Perfect.
Not,
hey, no Frank, problems. One of the great things about inviting Frank on the show is he saves Bruce and I from having to work hard prepping for the show. We pretty much say, hi, Frank, and then the show's gone. We ask him what's on his mind, and then all we usually need to do is take pauses for our commercial breaks. So, Frank, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, one would think that with the thinnest majorities we've had in the Arizona legislature in a long time, after we lost the 2022 elections for governor, secretary of state, and attorney general, Republicans might be working at playing together a whole lot better in the sandbox. But it seems the definitions of who is a Republican and what a conservative should believe are being redefined by people who, in some cases, just discovered the Republican Party about, 7 minutes ago. So talk about that.
I've seen an alarming trend over the last maybe year and a half to 2 years. I go to my legislative district meetings and my county meetings from time to time. And I listen to some of the things that are being said, and I'm astonished to quite frankly hear comments coming from what are basically elected precinct committeemen, or even maybe some cases appointed precinct committeemen, who are, you know, the grassroots, the base of the party. And I find these comments somewhat disturbing because they violate the core principles of the Republican Party. And then when I question them and talk to them, I find out that they were a Democrat 2 years ago, or some just as much, as little as a few months ago. And then they've been appointed as a PC because they switched, and, you know, some precinct captain or some county chair wants to fill his PC slot so he could toot his horn up to the state party about how many PCs he has. But they're not really doing a good job of educating these new members to the party. And then we have some elected officials, both locally and federally, that forgot what the definition of a Republican is. And they're basically running bills and you know, sort of going against what has been our solid base for support with the electorate. And I want to be clear, we're talking about two different things here. And a lot of people don't understand. There's the grassroots base of the party, which are sort of the party apparatus people, the precinct committeemen, the state committeemen, and like Bruce, the national committeemen. And those people are different from the voting population, the generic rank and file, mom and pop, you know, the guy out on the street, the guy, you know, filling potholes and working in a machine shop and you know, that guy. So what we tend to forget sometimes, if we hang out with the quote unquote apparatus of the party for too long, we get tunnel vision and we get in that echo chamber and we don't really pay attention to what the electorate is doing and what the average person is feeling out there. And it's to our detriment. And it's quite frankly, you know, something that's been bothering me. And we have, you know, not you guys, but we have radio hosts in Arizona, one of which is down here, that doesn't do their homework, that jumps on any cause celeb, loves to toot his horn and go after people and, you know, be a sort of a shock jock. And he actually uneducates Republican voters. It's actually frustrating to listen to some of this stuff because, again, I've been a Republican my entire life. I registered as a Republican literally within the week after my 18th birthday. I was the first Republican in my family. By the way, both my parents at the time were Democrats. They're both Republican now, by the way. But I knew at an early age that I wanted to be a Republican. The very first vote I casted was for Ronald Reagan. That was the first election. It was the 1984 election. It was his reelection, of course, his landslide reelection, and I got to vote for him. And I heard what Reagan, I've listened since then to thousands of Reagan speeches and hundreds of Reagan speeches, very, very patriotic speeches. And I even listened to, you know, presidents since then. We've had some good Republican presidents. I know not everybody was happy with the Bushes, you know, both the H.W. and W. And, you know, but believe it or not, those guys had some good policies and some good principles. We had, of course, Donald Trump, and Donald Trump has some really good, solid policies that if people get by the noise and the drama and sort of the
tweets,
the shockiness of the guy, a lot of the stuff that he did in the four years that he was in there, even though he's being stonewalled and blocked and everybody in their passive resistance, as they called it, that tried to get in his way, he got a lot of good things done. And it clearly showed as the economy was roaring before the COVID crisis hit. And had that economy had continued unabated before the Chinese decided to totally torpedo it on, I would put my tinfoil hat on for a second. On behalf of the leftists in this country, it just seemed kind of convenient that the steamroller known as Donald Trump was unstoppable virtually, and it was basically the Wuhan virus that put a stop to that.
Hey, but, Frank, before you get going too much further, let's go back to the PCs for a second, and then we'll come back to Donald Trump and all that. Thought that, and I've been a PC before, I thought that to be a PC, you can't just have registered as a Republican, and they kind of do a background check on you to make sure that you really are Republican. What the hell changed?
Not the case anymore. So what happens is there's a handful of county chairmen that went out and they got, you know, they get awards from the state party because they fill 100%. I live in a county that did that. Robert Montgomery out here in Cochise County was one of the few county chairmen that had 100%
precincts filled with precinct committeemen, and, you know, it was touted. So now every chairman in the state is trying to do that, and they're trying to keep the PC strength, which is a good thing in and of itself, and Bruce will tell you that. You know, going in with a full number of PCs to represent your area, both at the county level and then again at the state level and then at the national level, is always a good thing. But what was happening now, the desire to fill the ranks has sort of superseded the reality of making sure that these people that we're bringing into the party understand what it is to be a Republican, and they get the gist of what the Republican Party stands for. And some of them are not. I mean, I'll give an example. I was at a meeting 2 months ago, and we were talking about water, right? Water, and we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, later, because I got a lot of concerns about some things that were happening up at the legislature and the water department. But what really irritated me was we were talking about water, and this lady stands up, and she lives in down the road from me, down in Pierce, Sunsites area down there, and her well is going dry, right? She's at the bottom now. She bought a house that's very old, and that well was probably drilled 30 years ago, and it was only drilled probably to, you know, 300 feet. When I bought my house out here, I paid to have the well drilled to 700 feet, and I made sure I had about 350, 400 feet of water, column feet of water, so that it would be 50 years or 100 years before my well went dry. Sadly, hers went dry, but when she bought that house, she knew when she was buying that house, she should have checked to see how deep her well was and take that into consideration. I don't know if she did or she didn't, but she was upset because her well was going dry and it was going to cost her a significant amount of money. It's not cheap, as people will tell you, to drill a well. And she was going to have to pay about $30,000 or $40,000 to get her well drilled to 700 or 800 feet. And she said, I want, and she looks, and, you know, we had our legislators there, and she looks at our legislators, she goes, I want you to pass a bill that says the state pays to redrill my well. And I looked at her with this look, and I go, wow. Whoa. This is not a Republican principle, okay? First of all, we believe in individual responsibility, okay? You had the due diligence, caveat emptor, right, the buyer beware, when you bought that house, to do your homework on that house. Because you failed to do that does not constitute, I have to use my tax dollars and the tax dollars of all the other taxpayers in this state to drill your well. It's the same thing about the solar thing. I don't care. You want to put solar on your house? Knock your socks off. Don't make me pay for it.
Or okay? Buy a solar car.
Exactly.
Or an electric car.
It. Right, so I told this lady, and I said, you know, that's not a principle of the party. I mean, it's individual responsibility, and we believe in limited government, and we believe in fiscal responsibility. I said, you know what it would cost this state if we suddenly allowed everybody that bought a house to have the government drill their well? Do you know how many billions of dollars that would cost the taxpayers? And she's like, well, I got to do something because my well's running out, and I need the government to come in. I go, that's violates another principle of the party. Right? We don't believe in the government coming in. Government creates more problems than it solves. We don't want the government sticking its nose in these, basically what would be a free market decision here, right? So you need to go shopping around for a well company, maybe find one that can do it for a reasonable price or something. But you don't go to the government for that. This is something you can solve yourself. This is, yes, a financial burden, but I tell people all the time, I've faced many financial burdens. I've been broke. I've been living paycheck to paycheck. We've had hard times. Everybody's gone through them, but we overcome them. We work, we save, we scrimp, or we go out get a second job. We do something. And I told her, I said, you need to drill your own well.
Yeah, going to the government is what the government wants you to do on pretty much everything.
So then she says, well, when I lived in Maine, you know, we got the government to do this and we got the government to do that. I go, well, lady, this ain't Maine. You know, and then I found out that she was a Democrat and she had retired from in Maine and moved to Arizona about 4 years ago and switched to Republican because of Trump. She liked Trump, which a lot of former Democrats that are now Republicans did. They liked that because he was for the, you know, the forgotten man, the little guy, the guy that, you know, nobody seemed to pay attention to anymore. And a lot of these people felt that way, and they felt that he was the guy that was listening. So they became supporters of him because of that, because, you know, and I think Bruce told me the story about he was at the inauguration when, you know, that was a key part of Trump's speech, that he was going to take care and look out for the forgotten man, the guy that the quote-unquote swamp, the establishment class of the country, just totally forgot about. And that was appealing to a lot of people. But what they forget is, you know, Trump had, again, good ideas and good policies, but the principles of this party have to be maintained or we lose our identity and we sadly become Democrats, right? If we don't keep to these core principles. And I try to explain to her the core principles. And the number one core principle of this party is we, above everything else, protect individual liberty and freedom. That is our number one goal. The other party doesn't believe that. The government can do this. The government will take care of you. The government will cradle to grave, you know. But when they do that, they take away your freedom to do that. And people don't realize that. Hey, cradle to grave government care is the worst thing in the world for freedom.
Yeah, Frank, we need to take our first commercial break now and hear from our great sponsors so we can pay the man who runs the Bustos right. Mega Media Machine. So no station flipping. We'll be right back with Frank Antonori.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
What other kind of customers do you have?
So our biggest customers are actually like ranchers and people from outside of the Tucson area. They're buying a lot of square tubing. They're buying a lot of stuff for their ranch to close off fences.
We'll sell anything from 10 feet to 10,000 feet to somebody that comes in because we have new steel and surplus steel from steel mills. The reason we're able to get such good pricing on some of this stuff is, A, we sell scrap to the mill. So we have a relationship there, and then we can buy material, what they're making, bringing it back. And so we save on freight, and we have relationships for years with them. So I think that's really our niche market. We'll sell whatever you need.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some people view market declines as a time to panic. Good news, that's wrong. Markets have never gone down and then failed to come back to create new highs, and this time it's not different. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call Eb Wilkinson at 777-1911. That's 777-1911. Welcome back to Inside Track. Frank Antonori is joining us for the entire hour. So if you have a relevant question for Frank, call the listener live line at 790-2040. Frank, we left off and had to cut you short. Bruce has got a couple of questions he's got for you.
Right. Thanks for being with us today, Frank. People talk about, I want to go back to what you said about how the Republican Party is set up and the conservative movement, how it works, the mode of it. A lot of people today talk about a uniparty, meaning Democrats are just like the Republicans and Republicans are just like the Democrats. So I guess my question is, where does that come from? Does it come from the top down? Or with the lady from Maine who now lives in Arizona, did that uniparty sort of wanting government to be everything to all people come from the voters up to the top and the government's given them what they want? Have you thought about that before? Is that kind of a wacky question to ask?
No. You're hitting what I believe is part of the problem that we have to deal with as a party. We live in a Republican form of government, and that's a small R Republican, a republic, right? And we use our so we have to have elected leaders who are educated, who have a basis in sound policy, who understand the core tenets of the country and what it was founded on, who understand the Constitution and the principles embodied in that Constitution, and then they also have to understand the purpose of government and what the role of government is. And they are the guys that shield let's say the country itself from what I would call the bat guano crazy part of the country on both sides. You know, you have, you know, crazy left wingers and you have crazy right wingers, right? So these guys are supposed to be smart enough. You can't do every single crazy thing your constituents want you to do. And that's what you get when you get an Ocasio-Cortez up there, right? She'll do any bat guano crazy thing that basically anybody wants her to do, you know. And then on the other side of the aisle, you know, you got to watch some of these folks up there wanting to, you know, do some pretty crazy stuff and ban this and ban that and go after this. You know, that's not what this party's about, okay? Our party's about freedom and freedom of choice. And sometimes we don't like the choices that certain people make, but guess what? It's a free country, as far as I know. I've been fighting and defending it pretty much my entire adult life. And people make stupid decisions. And you can't criminalize stupidity. You don't encourage it, but you shouldn't criminalize it. People have a right. As John Wayne once said, life is hard. It's even harder if you're stupid. But, I mean, you got to let people be stupid. I mean, that's part of freedom. You can't wrap everybody in bubble wrap because one guy does something stupid. You have to take away the freedom of everybody else now to protect them from the same stupid thing that this guy did. That is not what we believe in. And that is something the left does. But we, over the years, have had Republican elected officials, both at the state and federal level, that listen to some of these people. And they go against the core principles of the party. They go against the basis and the founding of the country and the Constitution. And they want to so-called represent this constituency. But sometimes you got to sit down with that constituent. And I have done this many a time and explain to them, here's what the Constitution says, both the federal or state Constitution, and this is why I believe what you're asking me to do violates the Constitution. Here's what the principles that I stand for as a Republican, particularly a conservative Republican, are, and I believe what you're doing is violating it, and I can't run a bill like this because it violates every tenet and bone in my body. And I've had people yell at me and storm out of my office because I won't run a bill for them, and I feel bad because I lost a vote. Happens, but I'm also there. I also swore an oath to support, defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. There's people out there that you just can't satisfy, and sometimes politicians forget that if you try to make everybody happy, you're going to tick everybody off, and you need to sometimes be that guy that tells people no. And Frank, people sometimes they hate my guts for it, but I'll look them in the eye and say, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I think that's bad, and no, I'm not going to do it.
Frank, you live in Cochise County, where a huge issue was water in that county, just as it is in Pima County and all through Arizona. You know, the old expression, we fight over water, not whiskey. The governor, mayor of Tucson, and other Democrats seem to be marching to a theme of water insufficiency in our state. They're creating water wars, and it feels like this is designed to reduce new growth and force a new type of control over citizens. At least that's my view of it right now. There was also a significant piece of water legislation supported at the state legislature by longtime conservative leader at the legislature, Gail Griffin. Tell our listeners about your views on the flustercluck concerning this bill that was created by feuding members of the Republican Legislative Caucus, if you would, please.
Yeah, so Gail Griffin, and I served with Gail in the legislature, and I've known her for almost 20 years. She is probably one of maybe a handful of people in the state of Arizona that understands water policy from one end of the extreme to the other. Her knowledge of water, to this day, I call Gail and ask Gail water questions because I know she has an understanding. She sat on so many boards and commissions. She talks to ranchers. She talks to these orchard growers, these farmers out here. She talks to industry. She talks to the federal government. She talks to the Forest Service. She knows everything. And for anyone to dismiss Gail as being a problem, which, you know, we'll bring up later, a certain state senator did, discounted Gail and, you know, didn't like Gail and what Gail was trying to do and then went off on her own after only being in the legislature a few months. And the hubris of thinking that she had a better understanding of water policy in the state of Arizona than, and you know, basically, I'll might as well get going. It was SB 1432, and this was a striker. The bill was originally sponsored by Senator Wozniak, but she gave that bill to Alex Kaledin, who is a state representative, both of which are freshmen, Republicans, by the way, very inexperienced in the legislature. Alex had an issue with a constituency in a subdivision that had a problem with getting water. So rather than figure out the private sector way, which is what Gail Griffin was trying to do, she was running a bill, HB 2445, that basically had a private sector solution to solve this problem. The problem with that private sector solution is the governor didn't like it because it opened up the door for developers to gain access to water. And, you know, the Democrats are totally against growth, particularly in Maricopa County. And so they were like, oh, no, we're not going to agree. So the governor vetoed the first bill that was similar to that that Gail had, and she had threatened to veto this bill. So that bill went through the legislature. Every single Republican voted for that bill except for Senator Wadzak. She was the lone vote, voted against it, killed probably the conservative version of the bill, and then they substituted that bill with SB 1432, which basically, my anger with regard to this bill, is that this opened the door to have the state government come into unincorporated areas, and that's the big thing. Most of the water in this state is either privately owned by, like me, I own the water underneath my land. That's my water. I have water rights to my property. Or by the municipality and the incorporated boundary, the city of Tucson, Tucson Water, for example, owns that water. Or there is a AMA, an active management area, or a water district that controls that water. Other than that, any other water outside of that is controlled by the individual property owner, me. Okay? So what this bill does is it opens the door to create an extra government agency, and that's exactly what this bill did. And what people don't realize, again, back to the core principles of the party, limited government, right? This bill created another layer of government. It created a standpipe district, and by the way, what was really astonishing is that district, they gave the governor, it was a five-person district, the governor got three of those five appointments. So who do you think she put on that board? Do you think she put reasonable people that would believe in, you know, individual property rights and the right of people to have access to their own water? Or do you think she put in people from the Sierra Club and all the other growth entities out there? And that's exactly what happened. So they just had their first meeting. There's three governor appointees. There's only two legislative appointees, one by the speaker, one by the Senate president. So they're outnumbered 3-2. On every vote, 3-2, 3-2. So they created this extra government agency, and then they gave that agency the authority to tax or assess fees up to 10% of the total of a water bill. So not only did it create another form of government, it also created a mechanism to create revenue by taking it from citizens of Arizona. And you can define that in any way you want. There's a nice way to get around the T word, the tax word, by calling it a fee, but it's a tax. It's a water tax for them to give you water. So then this small section of this neighborhood, which really was only about 25% of the population, the other 75% of this neighborhood, you wouldn't believe what they did, Bruce. They drilled their own well. They actually went out and found a private water service to bring water to them. They entered into well share agreements with their neighbors and got their water.
You're talking about Rio Vista. Rio Verde, sorry.
Yeah. So that whole subdivision, 75% of that subdivision has water. 75 has water and access to water. We're talking about 25%. The 25% who knowingly bought those homes, knowing that they didn't have a supply of water, they didn't have a well, they didn't have anything other than trucking the water, and they knew that when they bought that house. And they bought that house for a lot cheaper than they would have compromised. And the reason was because it didn't have a well or water. You know, you drew a well, the price of the house is $50,000, $60,000 more. So they got a cheap house, and now they were given a year, and this is the other thing. When drought conditions went into effect, the city of Scottsdale had a standpipe at the end of the municipality that these private water companies were using to fill their trucks up with water, and they were trucking water a couple miles down the road to Rio Verde to fill people's water tanks at their house. Well, the city of Scottsdale said, hey, we're under drought restrictions. We're going to restrict the water to just the residents of Scottsdale. We're going to turn this standpipe off. So they said, we will give you a year. They told the residents, you have 1 year to go find another source of water. Drill your own well, find a well share, or find some way to truck the water in. So all of a sudden, they found out it was very expensive to truck the water in. So they went to Alex Kaledin and said, please, government, please come in. We were short-sighted. We failed to do our due diligence. We made a big mistake buying this house, and we don't want to deal with that mistake. We want you to have the government come in here and take care of us. And that's what 1432 did. And they now have opened the door to allow the state to establish a water district through a bill, just passing a bill and allowing the governor to appoint members of that board to control water outside the unincorporated boundary or outside an AMA or a water district. And they created legislatively a district, which usually requires a full vote of the people. An AMA requires it has to go on the ballot. And this is the line that was crossed. They basically now set the example with this bill. And again, this is people that don't understand the principles of the party here, and they don't understand the concept of limited government, nor do they understand the concept of what the right to pursue happiness means, which is the right to acquire and obtain property. And what they're doing is they took away property rights. They are now taking away water rights and property rights from people that aren't under a government jurisdiction. They have now created a mechanism to create that government jurisdiction, and that's the bad thing. And now that governor is out touting that she wants to take this model that was created by SB 1432 and take it out to the rest of the state and deal with these counties and other places, the rural parts where they build these houses and subdivisions. I want to come in there now, and I've got the model, and I'm going to come in there, and I'm going to be able to regulate water, whether it's in Cochise County, Mojave County, Graham, Greenlee. It doesn't matter. I can come in there now. I don't need to establish an AMA. So we had an AMA on the ballot this past November. It failed. The voters out here shot it down. It went down in flames, okay? So now the governor can say, well, we're going to come back out, and we're going to make a district, and we're going to do it through legislation. We're going to pass a bill, and that's it. And that's what's got me scared.
Frank, we got to take our bottom of the hour break. This problem, though, was really caused, in part at least, by a few, I won't call them dumb, but I will call them naive and inexperienced Republicans who allowed the left to come in and take these property rights away from all Arizonans. So let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break. We're a little late for that. When we return with Frank Antonori, remember, we've got some other great questions to ask him. No station flipping. We'll be right back. I'm proud to welcome my good friends at Tucson Iron and Metal Retail to Inside Track as an advertiser. Jamie Kipper and her staff are conservation experts. They sell round and square steel tubing, metal plate and roofing materials, as well as new and used steel, aluminum, and stainless steel to ranchers, artists, interior designers, roofers, and do-it-yourselfers, just like all of the listeners here. Tucson Iron and Metal Retail is open Monday through Fridays, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon. Tucson Iron and Steel Retail, 701 East 36th Street. Call 520-209-1576 or go to TucsonIronRetail.com. And when you do call, mention this ad and receive an additional 10% discount on their already great prices.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911. Welcome back to Inside Track. Eb is here. Bruce is here. Frank Antonori is here. Frank.
God, you finally got that right.
Oh, my God. I don't know what was going on in my tongue. It's, you know, got wrapped around my eye teeth.
Hey, Frank, you've spoken openly for a long time about the differences between the right and the left, and it largely has to do with the force of the state imposing its will on citizens. You have concerns, don't you, about some of the Republicans who support votes for legislation which don't protect the citizens' rights but gives more power to the state. And let's talk about ASDB as well with that. Your viewpoint?
ASDB, help me out on that.
Arizona School for the Deaf and Blind.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, there was a bill in the legislature. You know, the Arizona School for the Deaf and the Blind been around for, God, I'm almost as long as the state of Arizona.
A jillion years.
Yeah, almost 100 years. So this is a school that was set up for, obviously, kids that suffered a significant disability. They were either blind or deaf. And it was funded through the state, and it's a public school, but it's separately funded and has a separate funding allocation because it gets additional funding to deal with these kids that have these disabilities. And every 10 years, it comes up for a sunset review. And again, a certain individual, for whatever reason, and again, I don't know the logic because it escapes me why one would do this, mess with something that's been, for the most part, working fine for a long time. So when the renewal come up to extend the 10 years continuation, and people don't know, there's a lot of agencies in the state. Every 10 years they sunset. You have to reauthorize them for another 10 years. So this was up for its 10 years renewal. A certain senator wanted to expand this school so that they can handle all kids with disabilities. Now, that's patently unfair to obviously the parents and the kids that rely on this school, because diluting that school and allowing kids with all these other disabilities in there would have caused a significant impact on that school that already had an established way of managing kids with blindness and hearing problems. But then when that certain senator didn't get their way, they were like, well, I'm going to cut the thing down to where they have to go get their extension for continuation every 4 years and do it this four-year extension and as a form of punishment because I didn't get in my way. And then at the end of the day, that same senator, when that was brought in, you know, and Ken Bennett had a compromise, he said, well, let's bring this down to 8 years. You know, that senator fought that as well, you know, and wanted it at 4 years unless they got it opened up to all kids with disabilities. Well, there's other mechanisms to deal with children with disabilities, and there's programs that the state has, including those in public schools, and there's several private schools that are specialized for kids with disabilities. But I don't know why there was this fixation with putting kids with other disabilities in the deaf and blind school. But then when it came down to it, and they reached a compromise, and that compromise went to the floor for a vote, that senator voted against it. They voted again with the Democrats, and they basically hung her Republican colleagues out to dry. And it was just astonishing to me, and it created sort of all this trouble for the Republican Party, because now the left thinks we hate deaf and blind kids, you know, which is not the case at all. It was one vocal Arizona senator that caused all this trouble and basically made the rest of the party look bad because they had an issue with the deaf and blind school. And this is the stuff that gets under my skin, right? When I used the example of University Medical Center. Years ago, the University Medical Center was going under because the Board of Regents didn't know how to run a hospital. The legislature came in and privatized it. They got a private board and rebuilt the hospital. And, you know, the hospital that saved Gabby Gifford's life was a result of a private board that was properly managing that district. Why would you want to dilute that by bringing the government back in and having the government again take control? That's the same sort of principle, right? There are other mechanisms out there, but that was just, you know, part of the frustration of watching what was going down at the legislature was, and I kind of put a little bit of this blame on Warren Peterson. Warren's doing a good job as Senate President. He could be doing a better job of managing his caucus, and that's actually the majority leader's job. But when you have members that don't understand this, where they're very naive, they're rookies, they're freshmen, they go out there and they're touting as well. I'm up here to upset the status quo. I'm up here to, you know, that's not why people elected you. Okay, people elect you to govern. Okay, that's what Republicans do. We will govern. We make sound policy decisions to benefit the economy, to benefit the rank and file. We are not up there to throw mob fireballs at people, right? We're not up there. We sometimes, if there's a key issue that we want to hold our ground on, maybe, okay, but not everything. You can't be a no, and I'm going to fight the ban. I'm going to fight the – that's what Democrats do. That's a Democrat ideology, that sort of approach. Republicans, again, I get back to it, people will vote for good, solid conservatives. They won't vote for bat guano crazy. They just won't. So if you're one of those crazies up there just, you know, fighting whatever, you know, cause celeb or whatever some radio shock jock on the radio in Tucson tells you to go off and do, and that's your thing, and you're going to make all this noise and fight this battle, you know, you're not governing. And people, it's going to cost us. It's going to cost us in November. The Republicans that I know that are just regular voters are going asking me, Frank, what is up with these people in the legislature? Why are they doing all this crazy stuff? You know, and I tell them it's a handful. It's like five, and they're bullies. You know, and they threaten other Republicans, and they go after people that criticize them. They try to trample all over everybody's free speech. They're going around the state censuring people because they dare question them. And, you know, I'm surprised I haven't been censured yet. You know, it's astonishing because, you know, that's the method. You go on Facebook and you say something bad or you be critical of their bill, and all of a sudden this army of anti, you know, people come after you, and they try to not argue the point. You know, we prided ourselves, the party at least, on having spirited debates. Bruce, you remember some of the conventions we've had, very, very spirited debates. That is not the case with this new group of Republicans. They have this model that if you dare question them, we're going to shut you up. We're going to come after your economic livelihood. This is what the left does. We're going to go after you on the social media and try to shut you down. We're going to attack you relentlessly. And that's what the left does. And I have seen this more and more over the last couple of years. We are losing our principles as a party. We protect free speech. We welcome debate. We want to have that. It makes us stronger as a party. It gets us to the root of issues and problems. If you can't have that debate, you can never really solve the problem. And we have Republicans in this state right now that are stifling that debate, that are threatening anyone that dare question them, threatening to censure them, threatening to kick them out of the party or kick them off of boards. You know, whether it's the county board, executive board, the state executive board, they're trying to kick these people off because they dare question them and what they're doing. And I'll give you another example.
Hey, before you go on to that, Frank, let's we've only got a few minutes left. Let's shift the focus onto the preparedness of the Cochise County Party for the 2024 elections. And there appears to be serious problems in the county party who were so consequential in the recent Republican victories for Congress and the presidential election. So the party there appears to be dead in the water. Two opposing factions have been ducking it in and out. In the meantime, donors are absent. New voter registration and volunteers have slowed way down. And I'm not asking you to take sides, but how do you see things able to change quickly here?
Yeah, so here it is. We have, again, a handful, and I will say a handful of instigators that I do not believe are Republican, quite frankly. I mean, they'll call me a rhino. I'll be astonished. I've been in meetings where they've called me a rhino, and I sit there and laugh at them. I have been solid in my principles, and I have not wavered in 40 years from those principles. They are coming in, and they are attempting to stifle debate. They are attempting to bully members of the county party. And if you don't get into line and do things a certain way, they basically call the police on you, and they have you trespassed. And that's the craziness that's going on down there. Rather than allow you to enter a county meeting and be able to have your voice heard, they're saying, okay, you can't come in now. Now we're going to trespass you. We're going to kick you out. We're going to try to replace you as a PC. We're going to, you know, and that's what's causing the rift in the party. There's a handful of people that have this mindset that if you don't tote the line and you don't get in lockstep and do as you're told, then you're not a Republican. But that's the principle of the Democratic Party. They are the top-down party. They basically drive everything down and everybody just gets in line. That's what they're renowned for. We are the other way around. We are the grassroots party. And to try to stifle the grassroots, there's a certain activist who's going around the state of Arizona who literally quotes the Bible and says that there is evil in the Republican Party, and they have to purge the evil from the Republican Party, and they get to define who is evil. That's the thing. And they will label you a heretic. And this is what's creating the dissension out here. And again, it comes back to not following the principles of this party and not having enough people with the courage to stand up and point these people out. And myself and a handful of others have been doing that, and sadly, a lot of them have been getting a lot of grief for it. But, you know, I just don't care. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I have self-esteem. I'm not one of these fragile, snowflakey type people. You can call me any name in the book. You are not going to bother me. But when you're wrong, I will point it out to you that you're wrong.
Yeah, well, you've already been shot at, so that's no big deal. Hey, we've got a caller on line two. Donna, go ahead.
Hi, Frank. Hi, Bruce.
And
Juan Ciscomani, he's been getting so much grief because he's not MAGA enough. And he's a thoughtful person. He may be somewhat moderate in certain aspects. He's very conservative in others, and he's thoughtful. And he doesn't just go along and somebody says, oh, you have to impeach Joe Biden. Oh, okay. He wants to go through and look at everything before he makes a decision. And so people are saying one term Juan and really giving him grief. And I think he's really done a good job as our congressman. And we're lucky to have him, considering what we had the last 8 years. And we're not going to get somebody who's like you, Frank, or Jesse Kelly, or anything like that. I mean, in this particular congressional district, elects people like Jim Colby and Martha McSally. They're not going to elect a very hard conservative.
No, I would agree. Ahead, and again, yeah, there is a wing of the party that wants this absolutism, this purity that is unobtainable, right? And if it is, it's unelectable, right? Like I said, people are not going to vote for what they believe are bat guano crazy people, right? They're just not. And Juan is not crazy, right? And you mentioned it. He's a reasonable guy. I've known Juan for a long time as well. I remember when we both ran for the legislature together. God, that was like 13, 14 years ago when Juan was running in one of the west side of Tucson districts out there. And then, of course, he was in the governor's office. So he has matured significantly politically over the years, and he's gotten a lot of broad experience and whatnot. And sometimes people who don't have that experience, these armchair quarterbacks who sit back and watch, you know, various shows on TV or listen to certain, like, again, I say radio hosts that demand certain things from their elected officials, don't understand the big picture. And that's the whole point, that, like I said, of a Republican form of government. Juan will listen to you, and I have his cell phone number. I can call him and talk to Juan anytime, and he takes my call. All right, so I had the previous congresswoman that we had would not do that. I called her several times. She never answered my call. But I find Juan being genuine. He is not hardcore, that's for sure. He's not a Wendy Rogers type of congressman, and I don't want a Wendy Rogers type, even me. I'm conservative, but I don't want crazy being my legislator. I want a guy that's going to be smart, and he's got to be able to get things done and be able to work with certain individuals to get things to help his constituency. And that's the priority of a republic. Our form of government, okay? And that's what Juan's trying to do. Do I agree everything Juan does? No. I've called him and told him there's a few things I got some concerns with, Juan. I don't like this vote. I don't know why you voted this way. But that's what you should do. You should let him know. And then let him gauge based on the feedback that he gets. But to basically threaten the guy, you know, and again, I don't threaten people, and that's the other thing that these individuals do. They love to threaten people. You know, we're going to come after you. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. You know, that doesn't create any effectiveness, because winning elections is about addition, not subtraction. And again, you've got to find that common ground. That's why you have to have these discussions. That's why you have to have this debate. That's why Republicans have to be able to take criticism. Juan can take criticism. Certain legislators that we have clearly cannot take criticism, but at least Juan can, and he responds. And he'll answer it. And that's what, whether you like his policies or not, that's what we want from a leader.
Hey, as long as we're talking about Cochise County politics, what are the hottest issues there leading into the 2024 election?
Well, obviously the border is number one. It's a disaster down here. It's putting an undue burden on our public safety, you know, our cities, along the border, and of course the county sheriff's department. It's filling our jails with human smugglers and drug smugglers. The county is bearing the cost of that, and me being a county taxpayer and not too happy about the fact that Biden's policy is taking money out of my pocket. We just had a half-cent sales tax increase out here to provide more funding for the jail because the inmate population is essentially doubled out here. And so this is the impact that I think a lot of Cochise County voters, they want that border secured. That is definitely number one. Water is a big issue, too, because, again, the state and federal government's coming in here to try to control our water, and we believe in our property rights, and you don't mess with our water. Like Bruce said, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. You know, we're going to fight. We don't want people telling us how to use our natural resources that belong to us. You know, they're under my dirt. I own those water rights. So it's a couple other issues. You know, taxes is another big thing. You know, the Trump tax cuts are going to expire in a little bit here at the end of 25, and people are going to start paying more taxes. So if we don't get a Republican in there to extend the current tax code as what it is right now, everybody's going to see a huge tax increase in 2025. Okay, so that's the thing that's getting me to the ballot box is those key issues right there.
Frank, we had about three more minutes before we have to close the hour out. We have Earl on the line. Question or comment for Frank Antonori? Go ahead, Earl.
Well, my understanding from the budget bill that Juan Ciscomani and Schweikert voted for, and some other Republicans didn't, from their explanation of it, it was impossible for them to get to a shutdown stage, that if they had not voted for it at that point, there were enough Republicans that were ready to jump and join the Democrats and swing the bill largely in a bigger spending and new direction.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a good job if their understanding of their position was right. That's the best you can do when your back's up against the wall like that.
You know, that's a great point. So, go ahead, Frank.
Well, so I've seen this when I was in the legislature. There are a handful of Republicans that love to cherry pick bills, and especially if they know the votes are there to pass them and they don't have to put their name on that bill. They will vote against it and go out there and demagogue it and, you know, say, because I'm the hero, I voted against this bill. They know that if this bill were to fail, it would cause catastrophic impact to the economy. It would cause catastrophic impact to the rank and file voter up there. But they enjoy that luxury, and that's, again, that's not leadership. That's not governing. Okay, people that govern know how to find that common ground. When you have a divided government like we do, both at the federal and state level, where you have a Republican legislature and a Democrat governor, you have to, like Warren Peterson did with SB 102, which was the Prop 400. He negotiated a phenomenal bill, but with the Democrat governor, and he got a lot of good conservative stuff. Did he get everything? No. Did the governor get everything? No. But he got, I think he won that battle. You know, and the same thing with the Financial Responsibility Act that was the budget. That's what they call it. Republicans got a lot of good things through on that bill, but if they voted no, you're 100% right. If they'd have killed that, there was a handful of Republicans that would have flipped and voted with Democrats because they didn't want to deal with the impacts of voting no on that bill, and the Democrats would have gotten more out of that bill. But that's what leaders do. They find that common ground, and they get the best deal available without burning the house down. And we have certain Republicans that believe it's better to burn the house down. Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead, let's just burn the house down and we'll just function in the ashes that come after. And that's not governing. And
Frank,
voters don't put up with that.
Frank,
they don't put
we,
up
with that. We could go on for another hour, but we're up against the top of the hour break. Thanks so much for joining us. You're always welcome here at Inside Track. Keep fighting the fight. Best of luck deer hunting. When we return at the top of the hour, CBS News Break, Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Coalition, Crime Free Coalition, joins us to talk about crime on our streets. Lots more to come. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
A lot of the cities and the counties around have initiatives for artists, but I think we're one of the premier artist suppliers for steel. First Saturday of every month, you can come down early and actually go through the scrapyard. across the street. It's 7 acres of metal. You can walk through with our people and pick out what you want. It's always interesting to see what the artists have done. We've done actually a couple projects with the U of A Engineering Department and Music Department, where the engineering music students came down together. They had to pick something out of the scrap, and they had to build an instrument. And we have one of those in front of the plant. Some really cool things come out of the scrap.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some people view market declines as a time to panic. Good news, that's wrong. Markets have never gone down and then failed to come back to create new highs, and this time it's not different. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call Eb Wilkinson at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.